This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema breaks with Democrats, what it means for the party. And the red-hot housing market is slowing down, but experts are split on what's next.
The forecasts for next year are pretty varied. I have seen forecasts for home prices to drop 20% in 2023, and I've seen forecasts for a slight increase in home prices, about 1%. But it's really going to vary by market.
Plus, can artificial intelligence be punny? It's Friday, December 9th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema says she's leaving the Democratic Party to become an independent. Sinema has often broken with the Democratic caucus, forcing changes to major pieces of President Biden's legislative agenda. The move also threatens to complicate Democrats' narrow control of the Senate. Here with me now is our national politics reporter, Eliza Collins. Eliza, let's jump right into it. Why is Sinema making this move?
Well, Sinema says that she's made this decision because Arizona voters are sort of that maverick John McCain independent spirits. She says that's what she is, and she wants to align with her state. Now, this is a very surprising move. Sinema has been a Democrat. She was actually a more progressive Democrat at the beginning of her career. She is a centrist, as you mentioned, does vote with Republicans on things, but she does have a 93% voting record with Biden. So she's a pretty standard Democrat. And it is certainly sending shockwaves in Washington about what this looks like for Democrats' legislative agenda.
How much might this have to do with an expected primary challenge that Sinema could face in 2024?
So Sinema's team says nothing, but I do think this is very important to talk about. Despite that 93% voting record with Democrats, she really has angered a lot of Democrats across the spectrum in the state of Arizona. And she's up again in 2024. She would have to make it through a Democratic primary. Polls this year have shown that she could struggle to do that. Congressman Ruben Gallego is a more progressive Democrat who represents Central Phoenix. He has threatened to run against her. He was out with a statement today criticizing her and sort of humping himself up. He's not formally announced, but he's making very clear that it's something he's considering. And there was a real thought that Sinema could not make it through a Democratic primary, or it would be very difficult to do. So there is that question. Now, if she runs as an independent, does complicate the race. First of all, she'd have to get a lot of signatures in order to even qualify for the ballot. And then, you know, we'd have to see a voter split with a Republican, a Democrat, and an independent. But independents are the fastest growing voting bloc in Arizona.
Now, in Congress, Democrats hold a slim majority in the Senate. And as we've talked about, Sinema has split with them on some big issues. Will her new party affiliation substantially change how she works with the party going forward? And what could it mean for the GOP?
So that remains to be seen. Basically, right now, Democrats have a 51-49 majority with Senator Raphael Warnock's win earlier this week in Georgia. But currently, that 51-49 majority is including two independent senators, Senator Bernie Sanders and Senator Angus King in Maine. But they basically caucus with Democrats. They, for all intents and purposes, are considered Democrats, though they are independents. So we'll have to see if Sinema will be in that mold or a more sort of maverick style. Now, she will keep her committee assignments. Schumer has said it will not change the way the committees operate. And that's very important because currently Democrats have subpoena power and they have more Democrats than Republicans on their committees. So Sinema is remaining in that. So that's really what Democrats care about. She will not attend party lunches, but she did not do that before.
National politics reporter Eliza Collins. Eliza, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Sam Bankman-Fried, the embattled former CEO of FTX, says he'll testify before Congress next week. The House Financial Services Committee has a hearing set for Tuesday morning to investigate the crypto exchange's collapse. The Wall Street Journal has reported that FTX lent billions of dollars in customer assets to fund risky bets at its affiliated trading arm, Alameda Research. E-cigarette maker Juul has agreed to pay $1.7 billion in a legal settlement covering more than 5,000 lawsuits. That's according to the Journal's exclusive reporting with people familiar with the matter. Many of the lawsuits accuse the company of marketing its addictive products to children and teens. Juul has said it never targeted young people and that it has been working to regain the public's trust. The settlement deal was signed earlier this week. And in World Cup news, it's another upset. Croatia knocked out Brazil, the top team in men's soccer, according to FIFA's ranking system. Brazil had displayed their trademark flair in the tournament so far, and their talisman Neymar scored an overtime goal. But Croatia tied it up to push the game to a penalty shootout, a contest of nerves that they've won previously in this tournament and twice at the last World Cup in 2018, where they reached the final. One of Brazil's kickers hit the post to lose the game. In the other quarterfinal today, Argentina beat the Netherlands, also in a penalty shootout. Coming up, the housing market has people perplexed. Why it's difficult to predict what will happen next. That's after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
What's going on in the housing market? It's been a challenging question for experts, with many crosscurrents making it tough to predict what's next. It's also an area of the economy that's seen an impact from the Federal Reserve's plan to tamp down inflation by raising interest rates. The cost of borrowing has pushed would-be buyers out of the market. Prices are starting to come down, but perhaps not as quickly as many had hoped. Joining me now with more on the state of the market is Wall Street Journal housing reporter Nicole Friedman. Hi, Nicole. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, Nicole, start by giving us some more details about where we are right now after what's been a momentous year, to say the least, for the housing market. Tell us about how some of these cross currents are playing out across the country.
Yeah, so it's been a really dramatic year for the housing market. So 2020 and 2021 were really just a shocking housing boom. There was a ton of demand driven by the pandemic. People wanted bigger apartments, bigger houses, space to work from home, and mortgage rates fell to record lows. And so it became incredibly affordable for a lot of people to buy or to upgrade to a bigger place. And so there was a ton of demand. We saw huge price increases. Prices rose about 45% over those 2 years. We saw bidding wars all over the country. It was really, really dramatic. And then this year, as the Federal Reserve has raised interest rates, that has pushed mortgage rates up very rapidly. And mortgage rates are more than double where they were about a year ago. And so that has completely changed the picture for buyers, really pushed up their expected costs, and demand has plummeted. So we've gone from a red hot housing market to a housing slump in a pretty short period of time.
And in part, the Fed is aiming to help slow down the economy here. But when it comes to the housing market, is this working out as planned, or did the central bank perhaps overshoot? What are you hearing from experts?
So the housing market is definitely one of the main ways that the Federal Reserve's actions trickle into the economy, because the housing market is such a big part of the economy and it's very interest rate sensitive. And so it was expected that higher interest rates would lead to a cool down in the housing market. I think what has been surprising for a lot of experts is how quickly it happened, that mortgage rates have just never doubled this quickly. So the speed of the increase really caught buyers and sellers and people in the housing industry by surprise. And it feels like, you know, realtors have said to me, it just feels like the lights turned off, that they just went from having a lot of demand, a lot of houses flying off the shelves, to suddenly nobody coming to an open house at all. So I think it was expected that the interest rates would have an effect, but maybe not as quickly as it has shown up.
So what are forecasters saying now about what we might expect in 2023?
Yeah, so the forecasts for next year are pretty varied, and that has been surprising. A lot of economists say they are surprised by how wide the range is. I have seen forecasts for home prices to drop 20% in 2023, and I've seen forecasts for a slight increase in home prices, about 1%. And so that's a pretty wide range. A lot of people do expect prices to fall at some point next year, but it's really going to vary by market. There are some markets where prices surged a lot in the last 2 years that really boomed, particularly in the Western U.S., that are expected to maybe see bigger price decreases, but then other markets that might not see much at all. And so it's tricky to figure out that national picture because there's going to be so much variation in what's expected in local markets.
Nicole, obviously you've been speaking to a lot of home buyers or would-be home buyers this year. How have all these dynamics impacted their search and their plans?
A lot of buyers are just dropping out. They have gone from a situation in which their expected monthly payment is maybe similar to what they pay in rent or even lower than what they pay in rent to suddenly those expected monthly payments for a mortgage have gone up by hundreds of dollars a month, you know, even over $1,000 a month, depending on their budget. And so for a lot of people, it no longer makes financial sense to buy right now. And even for the people who still could afford it at these higher prices, they're saying, well, if prices are going to come down, maybe I'll just wait. So it's a mix of people who are being priced out of the market and people who are just afraid to buy because they don't know what's going to happen with the volatility, with their jobs, with the housing market. And so there's a huge number of buyers that were in the market at the beginning of the year or even this spring that have just stepped to the sidelines to wait this out.
Okay, so what about sellers then? It seems like many are now holding on to their homes rather than putting them on the market in this climate right now.
So that's a really fascinating dynamic in the market right now is that the higher mortgage rates have also pushed sellers out of the market, that a lot of sellers, they have low mortgage rates on their current home. A lot of sellers have a current mortgage rate that's 3% or 4%. And so they're looking at rates now above 6. And they're saying, well, why would I sell this home to buy a new home and have to take out a much more expensive mortgage? It makes that cost of upgrading or downsizing or whatever it is, significantly less favorable. And so real estate agents really say, you know, the sellers in the market right now are those people that have to sell because they have to move for a job or they have a divorce situation or a death, something that is forcing people to sell. But the people that can wait it out and kind of figure out what's next and maybe stay in their house for a while are choosing to do so because they don't think that this is the best time to sell one house and buy another.
Nicole, how are the dynamics within the housing market right now influencing the Fed's plan going forward? We are expecting another rate hike when they meet for the final time this year next week, but the path ahead in the new year is a bit more uncertain.
So the housing market is definitely one of the things the Federal Reserve is watching very closely, both the for sale market, but also the rental market, because rents also really surged these past 2 years during COVID. And that's another dynamic that the Fed is watching closely. If rents start to come down or if home prices start to come down more rapidly, that might change the decisions that they make next year. And interestingly, Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, you know, in November, he said that the housing market has been in a bubble. He called the pandemic housing market a bubble. He said it was unsustainable. And he said that now the housing market is going to kind of come through that and come out, you know, at a more balanced place. So the housing market is definitely something they have been watching closely and will continue to be watching closely next year as they're deciding what actions to take in 2023.
I've been speaking with Wall Street Journal housing reporter Nicole Friedman. Nicole, thank you as always.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, ChatGPT, an artificial intelligence robot, has taken the internet by storm. Users type in a question or give it a creative assignment, and it responds with an incredible level of nuance, logic, and quality. So far, people have asked it to write stories, instructions, essays, and even puns. In Brooklyn, New York, punsters gathered to compete in the Punderdome, a regular event hosted at a performance space called Littlefield. This time around, it pitted human wordsmiths against ChatGPT. Our reporter Ben Eisen became part of the story, reading the puns produced by the chatbot to an audience that decided on the winners, measured by the loudness of their applause. Here's one joke Ben told on behalf of contestant one. That's ChatGPT.
What's the state where common sense is in short supply? Florida.
That one went over well with the audience, but they weren't all hits.
I'm not from the shore, but I jerseyly know how to have a good time.
At the end of the evening, a human won the Punderdome.
Who won? Is it contestant one or contestant two?
Definitely two.
Definitely two. All right.
So what held the chatbot back? Here's Ben to explain.
This program can write out some really good quality
writing. It can write you an essay. It could write you a limerick. But when it comes to this pun competition, you know, there's like a lot more of a human element to that than you might expect. There's sort of this back and forth. There's feeding off the crowd, feeding off the competitor. And so the bot just really isn't quite there yet in terms of mastering that element of it.
So artificial intelligence chatbots can talk like us, but they may not be as punny. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Peter Granitz filled in for Luke Vargas this week. The show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Kate Bullivant, with help from Mohsen Ali, Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Michael Kosmides, Chris Sinsley, and Philana Patterson. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.